Tango Tango Papa 2066, March 2nd, 2021.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this afternoon from home. I've been home for the past several days. Actually, I have to go back to work tomorrow. I have to pick a load up at Neosho, Missouri at noon. So I'm going to have to get up and around, and the problem that I have is that the trailer that I have really should be washed out, and there is a truck wash at Blue Beacon Truck Wash north of Joplin, or not north of Joplin, at Joplin, but that's about, I looked, it's about 17 miles or something from Neosho, north of Neosho. So I may, depending on how bad it is, there's a bunch of wood, or, you know, some pieces of wood, broken pieces of pallet in there. So I may be able to just simply sweep it out, or I probably have to leave early enough so that if I have to, then I can go on up to that Blue Beacon at Joplin and wait in line, get the trailer washed out, and then get back to Neosho before noon. So, see how that goes. I think I can probably just sweep the trailer out and dispose of the wood. Should be able to do that and get away with it. Because I think it was just mostly a bunch of debris in there. So, anyhow, it's, you know, I've been home, like I said, for the past few days. The weather, for a day or two, especially one of the days, it rained fairly steadily. And then yesterday and today, it's been sunny. Temperature's still a little cool. It's like in the mid-50s, I think, today. And same yesterday. It was just a little bit on the cool side, but it was sunny. Nothing like what it was before. Now, one morning I looked, and it was, it was just whenever I woke up. And looked at the temperature here at home on Google, and it said it was minus 12. Well, actually, the low temperature around here was at least minus 20. So that's pretty cold. I don't know how long it stayed at minus 20, but it was... There were some single-digit days, and it stayed pretty cold for, a couple of weeks, it seemed like. Or the better part of 2 weeks, it was below freezing. So there were some pretty brutal temperatures. Now, by the time I made it home, all of the snow was completely gone. So that's just all completely gone. That was all gone by the time I made it home, because it had warmed up enough days above freezing where whatever ice and snow there was, it was just, and I think it was mostly just snow, it was gone. So, but I had been concerned about my house. Normally I leave it on 55 degrees in the winter when I'm gone, and typically I've never had a problem doing that. I did go ahead and raise it up to 60 because they had been talking about, well, there may be brownouts or rotating blackouts or whatever, and I thought, you know, and then plus there might have been, that we were threatened with ice, or this area was threatened with ice, which can be a real problem for this area if you get freezing rain, for the electricity, obviously. Because there have been times in the past where it's just destroyed the electrical wiring where they've almost had to rebuild the whole system, or a lot, large portions of it. I think that was maybe back in 2009, I think that happened. Or maybe 2008, I don't remember when that happened the last time, but there was one period, you know, my electricity was off for about a week or a little more before it was restored. So, you know, I did raise the thermostat up to 60. Of course, I got one of those Nest remote control thermostats. But I don't think the power really never did go off. Now, some people, I guess, it may have gone off for a few minutes or whatever. Mine never really, you know, because I was able to monitor it, and I could tell if it's been off or not because of the cameras. And I don't think when it was, especially during the cold spell, when it was really cold, it stayed on the entire time. And then the other thing I was worried about, I have a water line that comes up out, it's under the house in the crawl space, comes up out of the ground, and it's probably about straight up into the bottom of the house. It's about maybe two and a half feet at the most, that I had a, I've had, you know, for years, a heat tape on it. If you're not familiar with a heat tape, what that is, they come in various lengths, and you simply put them up next to, usually it's a, would be a copper water line. You put it up next to the copper water line, and you wrap it with insulation, and you plug the thing in, and they get warm. So, and they keep the water line from freezing. Well, I had forgotten that I had gone ahead and replaced that, got my youngest brother to do it in 2015. I'd completely forgotten about that, and I was thinking I still had the original heat tape, which that dates all the way back to 1995. And I was sure, even in 2015, I was sure that the thing had probably long since stopped working. But I never did experience any kind of frozen, you know, where the water wouldn't come on. So, but I did have him go ahead and replace that with a, you know, and it, you know, you can get them in like really short ones, like 3 feet. And I think that's what it was replaced with. So, and then, it, you know, and then it wrapped in the insulation. But so I'd say apparently that worked, even though, you know, and it probably should be replaced again, because I don't know how long those things you can really expect them to last. But because they do burn out, they just kind of quit working. So it's probably time to replace that again, just to be on the safe side. So, but there were no problems. The only problem that I had when I did get home, I've got three bathrooms, 2.5 baths, and so there's a bathroom in my bedroom. There's a, you know, kind of so-called ensuite master bath, in the master bedroom, and there's a toilet in there, and I happened to walk in there, and water was brown. I thought, well, what happened? I didn't flush. That was my immediate thought, that I'd failed to flush the toilet. And so I flushed it, and then I could see this outline of a mouse. So apparently what had happened, when it got really cold, the mouse came in, found its way into the house, and then apparently it was thirsty and it needed water, and it found, you know, got up in the stool, and then it got in there and it couldn't get out, and it drowned, and it, you know, died, obviously. And it started decomposing, and that's sort of what turned the water brown. And there was a little, after I flushed the stool, there was a little bit of a dead smell, just a little hint of it, but the water pretty much kept the thing from really stinking. So, but it was a good-sized mouse. I guess it could have been a small rat, but I think it was more of a, because rats are, can, you know, I think it was just a large mouse. But in any case, it went into the septic tank, so. But that's, I've never had one that, you know, but it kind of makes sense that it would, you know, if it climbed into the stool, climbed into the toilet, then it wouldn't be able to get out. Now, in the past, I have found, there's been a time or two where I found those little, you know, the little frogs, the really little ones. Those have gotten into the house before. That's happened at least twice. And they made their way to the toilet. But of course, they're just kind of not really trapped there necessarily, because a frog can kind of... So what I found with them is that they sort of sort of perched themselves above the water line along the edge of the bowl. I've seen that happen a couple of times. So anyway, that's I don't really like it when, you know, some sort of critters like that get into the house, and you know. This is my space. If they're outside, that's one thing. But inside my space, you know, they become fair game. Now, if it's something alive and I can trap it, then I'll, because I've done that with mice before, where they were, you know, because I had, there was one time, and I'm sure I talked about it at the time, I've got this big garden tub in that same bathroom I was talking about that I never use. Very rarely do I ever use that garden tub, but in any case, the thing's humongous. But there were three separate baby mice that got in. Somehow, I don't know why they got into that tub, but they got in there and they couldn't get out. And so I think each time, now, I don't remember, but I think what I did, at least one of them was still alive, and they all weren't in there at the same time. It was like one, and then the next, that maybe the later that day, or the next day, or the next day after that, they just kept appearing. But at least the last one, I was able to kind of trap. It was still alive, and I was able to trap it in a trash can, and then took it outside, and I think it died. I'm sure something ate it. You know, but I wasn't gonna. You know, because you don't, you know, it's one thing to, you know, kill something in a trap and then, you know, dispose of it with a trap. But if it's just trapped in a tub, you know, I'm not going to try squashing the thing or whatever. And then, you know, you might get blood or, the, you know, cause the thing to split open. So, you know, it's just easier if it's still alive, especially just, you know, kind of scoop it up into a trash can, a small trash can, and dump it outside. So that's what I did. But don't really like it when I, you know, find things in here necessarily. But they, you know, that's one of the problems. You know, little critters like that do come in, you know, find their way into the house from time to time, and it can be... normally, it's not that big of a problem, but there have been times where it is a problem. I'm sure I talked about it at the time. Back in 2015, I had a possum that made its way into the sort of the below the, you know, kind of the subfloor of the house, and it made its way in there, and then it got lost and it couldn't get out, and then it died. And then it started decomposing, and it started stinking pretty bad, and the smell was kind of coming up through the vent, the, you know, the venting for the furnace, you know, the HVAC, you know. So the smell started coming up through the, especially in one of the bathrooms. It started coming, you know, and we sort of were able to localize it, and that's when my younger brother was able to get under there and find the thing, and, you know, I ended up dragging it out in the woods in the back, but, and it was pretty well decomposed, but it that thing stunk to high heaven. But I don't know if that's more likely to happen, you know, because I'm in a sort of a more of a rural area with woods, and it's possible that that's more likely to happen than, let's say, someone that lives in, you know, in a neighborhood with a, you know, close proximity to neighbors. But, you know, things like mice, you're still going to end up with a problem sometimes, and there are plenty of stories. If you go looking, there are plenty of stories with people that things get in their attic and et cetera, et cetera. So it's not a, you know, if you have a house and you live in it long enough, you're probably going to end up with that kind of a problem. So anyway, I have a couple of files that Joel sent me via Voxer, and I'm going to be playing those and responding. Now, one of the things, you know, that I wanted to talk about, you know, a lot of people, they've went on and on and on about how horrible 2020 was, and you know, how people are stressed out, and they're still stressed out, and that, you know, that's a common theme to hear, especially you hear people mention that constantly. And and of course things happen, you know, things, you know, and inconveniences happen. And, you know, and with a lot of people, it was more than simply an inconvenience. You know, they closed down a lot of service jobs, restaurants, for example. There's a lot of people that are employed in a restaurant business. And those were simply closed down for a long period of time, or severely reduced. Many of them are still not up to full capacity, although I am seeing a lot more people eating out now. So I have noticed that within the past, I'd say the past month or so, there are a lot more people that are eating out. So that's kind of coming back. There's still a lot of restaurants that have been, you know, they're closed, and they're probably closed forever. Now, eventually, people will, you know, some restaurants will be back. You know, other people are going to reopen restaurants once the restaurant business kind of comes back. You know, it's going to be different. But, you know, and a lot of the big chains, some of them closed different locations and kept others open. But most of the big chains are still around. So, but in any case, a lot of people's lives were really disrupted. And even beyond that, you know, there were people, you know, a lot of people are kind of stressed. You know, they kind of have lots of anxiety. And the problem with anxiety, people think, well, it's this external thing is the cause. Well, it's not really the cause. Sure, the external thing can kind of stress you and what have you, but that's not really anxiety per se. And what I have found is that if I am right with my conscience, if I've made friends with my conscience, and that's really the only thing that you can possibly do, that where you actually have free will, is just, you know, kind of, you can either, you know, try to be enemies with your conscience and keep, you know, you think your conscience is just a guilty conscience, and somehow society, your parents, whoever programmed that into you, or you picked it up by osmosis, and that, you know, it's this mean, nasty, evil conscience, and poor you. Well, your conscience is there. That's God. That's actually God talking to you, whether you want to believe that or not, and that's really irrelevant. That is actually God talking to you. But what you want to do is make friends with your conscience, and that means facing your conscience. You know, don't run away from it. Maybe you've spent an entire lifetime running from it. But if you can make kind of let your conscience catch up with you and make friends with it, then even when you make mistakes, because, you know, I still make mistakes, when I make, you know, let's say I make some kind of moral mistake, when I do, I simply let my conscience get me, you know, it just you know, kind of tell me whatever it wants to tell me. And the relationship is not disrupted. The biggest mistake that you can make is resenting your conscience. It's a huge mistake. That makes it 1,000 times worse. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why I've talked about this for several years. I am absolutely at peace with, regardless of what happens, who gets into the presidency or whatever else there is, you know, whatever silly things that people do, I am at peace with the world. I have this, you could call it peace of mind that really kind of defies understanding. But I think that comes as a result of really sincerely making friends with your conscience. Now, it's one thing to say you're going to make friends with your conscience or you want to make friends with your conscience. It's one thing to think that you're being sincere, but then you've got to ask yourself the question, am I really sincere? Am I really sincere with my conscience? And I think, you know, it ended up taking me a long while to kind of get to that point, I believe. But I really think that's why I have, it's really hard to describe, but words sort of fall apart. But that's why I just say peace of mind, but it goes well beyond peace of mind. It's, you know, kind of unmovable in a way. Regardless of what happens, regardless of what goes on around me, I am completely at peace. You know, I have that peace, a peace of mind. And again, those words sort of fail describing what I'm trying to get across. But that comes as a result of giving up resentment. And I've talked, if you've listened to me very long, I've talked about that endlessly for years. And it's incredibly important, because that's one of the major ways we as human beings play God in our own minds is, we resent people, places, and things. It's mostly people, but it's also places and things. Resentment comes packaged with its own very effective denial mechanisms, and so it's very easy to say, "Well, I don't resent my parents. I don't, because it starts out resenting parents, because they're usually the first people that you encounter, and even if, let's say, you don't have any parents, you know, or there's, you know, then you're going to resent the fact that you don't have any, you know, that there's no parent placeholder. You know, the parent's absent. And you still resent them. But usually it snowballs from there. You resent your parents, and then you resent other people, and resent the people at school, and this person and that person, and then you, without ever dealing properly with it, facing it properly, and it gets worse and worse and worse, and you become more, you have greater, become greater enemies with your conscience. You try to drive a wedge between yourself and your conscience. And it causes you to fall into all sorts of distractions, find other people that will agree with you that right is wrong and wrong is right. And it turns you into an externalized person. You begin to absorb the environment around you, the you know, whatever the environment is around you, you sort of absorb it, the social environment. And you're not yourself. You're not who you've left behind, who you could have been. So the way back is to learn how to be still and allow your conscience to catch up with you. Now, if you go to my website, TruckerTomPodcast.com, up at the top, there's a link that says meditation. Click on that, and there's about, about 3 or 4 MP3 files. You can download them, listen to them on your, you know, whatever device, computer. Listen to them right there, and, you know, even download them. Burn them onto a CD if you want to, however you want to do it. And they will teach you how, you know, very simple meditation technique. It's a very simple technique to practice being still. There's a line in the Bible that says, "Be still and know that I am God." And so basically, be still and know that you're, you know, that your conscience is God. And just allow that conscience to catch up with you. What do you have to lose? So, and if you, I can't promise it'll help everybody, but it will help. I do believe it will help most people. But it's, you can't do it just once. It's up to you to practice this meditation on a regular basis. Especially, it's really especially important in the morning when you first wake up. Set aside 10 minutes, you know, and practice that. After you do it, you get the hang of it. It's really second nature. But the thing is, you have to do it. You have to continue doing it. You can't just slack off and think, "Well, I'm not going to do it," or whatever. That's a mistake. You want to continue to do it. Even if it, you know, because initially you're probably going to realize that it's kind of, you feel a lot more calm. And then after a while, you're going to think, "Well, it's not, you know, nothing's happening." But continue with it. Because this peace of mind that I'm talking about, probably I think that kind of snuck up on me. And that happened, probably 2008, maybe, you know, early 2009, and I suddenly realized that it was really interesting, because I suddenly realized that my anxiety was just gone. And, you know, and I was kind of dumbfounded for a bit. Where did the anxiety go? But that's on the website. Give it a try. Like I say, I do believe it will help most people. But it's up to you to continue with it. You have to want to make friends with your conscience. So, now the other thing that I wanted to talk about, let me think here. This idea, you know, there's the story of the ancient Israelites, you know, and they you know, Moses parted the Red Sea, and then they were wandering in the wilderness for, 40 years? But, you know, and that's the story. And then there was this idea that there was manna. You had the manna from heaven. You know, the manna, you know, some kind of a heavenly bread that sort of maybe fell out of the sky that they ate. Now, I don't know if that's literally true. You know, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. But it's certainly kind of metaphorically true. And what do I mean by that? As I realized, when let's say you have a large enough group of people, you know, the ancient Israelites, you know, there's going to be some of them that grumble and some of them, you know, and they did, of course. And some of them would, you know, whine and moan and groan more than others, and some of them probably just, got on with it and weren't that much of a problem for Moses. But let's say you had enough of them that were, let's say they really did, you know, kind of make friends with their conscience. And they just got on with their existence. Meaning that they interacted with each other within a certain moral framework. Now, if you have a large group of people and you get enough of them interacting with each other, meaning that they're working, because, you know, I'm sorry, but that's part of an existence as a human being. If you want to have a decent existence, a good existence, it means you're going to work. You're going to be producing something for other people. You're going to be producing some sort of a good and or service for other people. And so if people start doing that, you know, kind of play a trading game, you know, where they sort of, you know, of course they begin to trust each other. One person's good at this and one person's good at that and another person's good at something else, and they're all doing that, and then they sort of specialize to a degree. They're sort of trading with each other, trading their labor. That's what, you know, then the manna, that's where the manna comes from. And in a sense, you know, right here in our modern society, you know, where we seem to have all these problems, especially social problems, we've got all of these problems that, you know, kind of really occupy people's minds. The manna from heaven is flowing pretty well. And I think that's true, even if you have, it doesn't take everybody. You know, it could just be you as an individual. Because it does work individually as well. If you work, you have the proper values, and you've got the right moral framework that you actually live. And, you know, not simply say that I believe in this and I believe in that, but you demonstrate it via your behavior, because that's really the ultimate standard to by which to determine what your values are or anyone's values are. Look at your behavior. Look at their behavior. How are you behaving as you interact with other people? How are you behaving? And if you're behaving properly, the manna is coming, is kind of falling down from heaven, in a sense. That's been my experience. And it's not simply a matter of, well, you're just lucky, or you're this, or you're that. I'm convinced it really does come down to what kind of person are you? What values do you really have? What values do you live? And it's been my experience, if I live by living the proper values, I have everything that I need. And I think, you know, you look at people, and I think that's true for most people. If they live the proper values, then they'll have essentially everything that they need in order to continue living those proper values. But at the same time, if you have someone that's just a louse and they for whatever reason, they end up with all kinds of problems. So, anyway, I think now I'm going to go ahead and play Joel's first file. So here is Joel.
Hey, Tom. It's Joel McLaughlin here from Ohio, the great white north. At least that's how it feels anyway. It's so much snow around here. But I think this weekend we are supposed to start to drop above freezing. I don't know why I said below. Anyway, lots of snow and ice. But just thought I'd say first, hope you're staying warm. Hope you're staying in good health and all that stuff. It looks like you got a new truck. That's good. So hopefully your heat and all that's working. But I'm talking to you here today on the death of a legend, Rush Limbaugh. Like him or not, talk radio and podcasting in many respects, I think, wouldn't be what it is today. Because I think a lot of podcasters like yourself, like myself, probably have drawn some inspiration from what we've seen Rush going through, what we see he did. So, like it or not, he had a great influence on this world, right? The amount of vitriol, well, not vitriol, but more or less celebration or the good kind of comments I'm seeing on the Twitter sphere, first makes it really easy to clean up my Twitter feeds. You know, if somebody's like that, I don't really want to listen to them. They're not worth my time. So, block it. That way I don't see them. but then they're doing their version of whataboutism and saying, well, he said stuff about gays and blah blah blah. And it's like, well, yeah, and they're saying that he drove hate. In a way, he probably did, but I don't think he drove the kind of hate that they thought. He drove their hate, because that's what I'm seeing. I'm not seeing people who say, oh, I disagreed with him. You know, I won't miss his opinions. Sorry, he had to die. You don't see that. You know, you see good, or good riddance, or he's going to hell. And, you know, first off, you know, hey, pot calling kettle black here. You know, that's the only thing I could see. You know, but he is an icon. Was he the best person there is? Nope, none of us are. You know, but I think he is. You know, he's something that I think the world's going to miss. And I think the Ben Shapiro's, you know, and the Clavens and the Dan Bongino, Giano, or how do you ever say his name? They wouldn't be around if it wasn't for him, you know. And now, ironically, they say, well, he drove hate. He did this and he did that, but yet I see all sorts of hate for him, all sorts of hate for conservative values, all sorts of hate for things that are normal. You know, when I see the other side, once you call it chest feeding instead of breastfeeding, and I'm like, are you nuts? You know, because... Yeah, and it's all in the name of trans rights. But then it's like this. I'm like, okay, you got a trans man happens to get pregnant, you know, and being that they're a trans man and didn't have the surgery, that means that they can breastfeed. And they ignore the fact when they say, well, look, why don't we call it chest feeding because men don't have breasts? I'm like, oh, contraire. They do have breasts. Men, trans or otherwise, can get breast cancer and do get breast cancer. So the whole idea is just stupid in many respects. And, it just amazes me that the people on the left can't see through their own hypocrisy. You know, I see it all the time. You know, I don't say anything, but I see it all the time. You know, there's the ridiculousness of some of their stupid ideas. You know, it's just mind-boggling to me. So, anyway, that's all I was going to think about with that. And I'm going to go on to my next topic. And I'll send another box for that.
Thank you, Joel. Yeah, Rush Limbaugh was quite unique. He had he always had, you know, came up with a, you know, or, and I'm sure, you know, it had to do with it, the way he looked at the world, but he always was able to come up with a very unique viewpoint. Now, it's a terrible mistake to sort of, you know, even say you know you're happy that someone is dead. That's a mistake, and the reason why it's a mistake, it's, you know, it's detrimental to you. To let's say that you say, well, you know, I'm happy that so-and-so's dead. And, you know, it could be, let's say it's, you know, let's say somebody like Nancy Pelosi dies. It, you know, it's gonna, you know, and she will at some point. And there, you know, and the people on our side, you know, may say, oh, I'm happy that she died. That's a mistake. And so here's the reason why. The reason why is because, you know, when you say something like that, and you and obviously people really have, they really feel that way. I'm sure the people on the other side, there are people that just, that literally, for whatever reason, just despised Rush Limbaugh. Yeah, they're playing, you know, it's a way of kind of making yourself feel superior in your own mind. you know, and kind of giving it voice. You know, kind of giving your own superiority voice, what you think is superiority, over someone else's inferiority. And you're propping up, in part, you're kind of propping up the wrong side of your ego. And so it's detrimental to you if you do that. It really is. It really is detrimental to sort of denigrate is that really the right word? Kind of pile on. I'm not coming up with the proper word, but it really is a mistake to rejoice. Let's say rejoice in the misfortune of your enemy. That is a mistake, and I think there's even a line in the Bible somewhere where it states that. Don't rejoice at your enemy's misfortune. Why? Because it really hurts you to do so. So, Rush Limbaugh really he was really a pioneer in a sense. Because he, took something, like AM radio was basically dead or practically dead, and he really brought the thing back to life in a way that it hadn't been in probably years. And he really made AM radio, kind of really made it come back to life to a large extent. So now I don't know what kind of a state AM radio's in now. I just don't listen to the radio anymore. Very, very rarely do I listen to any kind of radio. So, and even though I liked Rush Limbaugh, and there was a time where I listened to him a lot, I kind of got to the point where I just didn't really want to, even though I enjoyed listening to him and enjoyed his perspective, and I would still listen to him once in a while, but I got to where I just had to turn it off because of, it was just, all of the stuff that went on. And that one of the things that amazes me is how in the world did he, because he was doing constant research and he had other people, researching and making clips, news media clips for him of this person and that person. And he was immersing, even though he had assistance, he was immersing himself in all that negative news, and a lot of it's propaganda increasingly. And how in the world he was able to stand that day in and day out for all of those years. It's amazing. Because at some point, I've turned my back on it. And I suggest, for your, one of the things, if you want, some peace of mind, turn off all the, turn it all off, because a lot of it's lies now. It's just out and out. It's out and out lies, or they just omit things and they sort of cherry pick this and cherry pick that, and or they just simply make things up. The more negative it is, the better. And the reason that negative stuff, we end up, and it's just our makeup as human beings, we respond to things that are negative at least one order of magnitude more than we do things that are positive. And there's a reason for that. Let's say your ancestors, sees a snake in the, sees a snake, and human beings are very good at to kind of detecting snakes in our lower vision. You know, you see a snake, you know, that's something really negative, and that, you know, and it's something, and of course, that's something that can kill you. So you darn well better pay attention to it. But if it's just something that works, you know, it's something that just functions, it works, that's not news. If something functions, that's really not something to really get excited about. So the negative stuff really sticks out to us. And so once we ended up with all this media and now social media and you got the internet and you got, you know, all these mobile devices, excuse me, it's just gone into a vicious circle, a cycle of making it more and more and more negative and more outrageous to grab attention. And in many cases, it's just, you know, long enough so that the ads display. They don't even care if you really look at them. They just want them to display. Ads on television are really, a lot of them are just absolutely mindless. They're just trying to create a feeling. And they repeat them over and over and over again. And you kind of end up with this feeling about whatever the product is that they're trying to push. So the best thing the thing that I do, I can tell you what I do, is that I avoid as much of it as I possibly can. Very seldom, you know, I go days and days and days without even looking at Facebook. And because I've done that, a lot of the political stuff's just not there now. So I'll kind of look through Facebook occasionally. And I've shut off a lot of the notifications so that, you know, I'm not getting bombarded with all these weird headlines, even though some of them are still popping through. But I've really, you know, I've really made an effort to turn it off. Then the other part of that is to make an effort to remain conscious. And that kind of goes back to the meditation. It really does kind of go back to the meditation and the state of mind that learning to be still creates. Because I can kind of sit still, like I'm doing it right now. Just kind of sitting still. And things are very calm. Of course, I'm at my house and things are very quiet. But even if I'm in my truck driving, I can it's more, really more of an attitude than anything else. Just, you know, something happens, something doesn't go quite the way I want it to. I simply, you know, remain calm. And the vast majority of the time, things work themselves out without me getting emotionally upset in any way. Most things resolve themselves. And in fact, everything gets resolved. Every problem ends up becoming resolved. So, in any case, I could go on and on and on, but let's go ahead and listen to Joel's second comment. This is a little bit longer one. He's talking about his new house that's under construction. So here is Joel.
Now I'm going on to looking at getting ready for my home. We're building a new house. I think I told you that. We are halfway through the build right now. I think the framing should be, if it's not complete this week, it should be complete pretty soon. I think they may be dragging their feet a little bit because our siding and windows are not in yet. I think you're probably also looking for doors and stuff too, because if they got framing done, we'd be at a standstill anyway, because it's not like they can go through and do the wiring and the rest of it inside, because the minute they do, somebody's going to come in and tear it out, because the scrappers, especially if they don't have a way to secure things. So, we should be able to move in May, but one of the things I've been kind of focusing on here was trying to get ready for that, and part of that comes with just getting rid of things. So I've been doing some of that here and there. We got rid of a whole bunch of stuff when we moved into the apartment. And so that's part of it. The other part is, as part of our build, we get certain quote-unquote smart home features. Like there's going to be a doorbell. It's not a Ring, but it's similar to a Ring, where it's got an internet service and it has a camera on it. We're getting I think it's a Qlosys panel that basically controls all the smart home features. So like from that one panel, I can control the thermostat, I can control the lights that are in the house and stuff like that. Now, not all the lights. I think there's only going to be one switch, which I believe is going to go out in a great room for controlling lights and stuff like that. But the thermostat is a Honeywell Z-Wave thermostat. That's what's going to be built into the house. This panel is going to be built in the house, and it's the service on it is provided by alarm.com. So I'll probably have to sign up for that service. I'm going to start looking for Z-Wave driven components, since that's going to be the control panel for it, and everything's going to work with Z-Wave. It's supposed to have some other things in there too, like the ability to I can basically have the app on my phone tracking me, and then when I get within a certain distance from my home, it'll automatically unlock that front door. All right, not that I honestly, that front door, I don't really care if that one unlocks with what they call it, geofencing, mostly because we're going to use the garage door more. You know, we'll pull the cars in the car in the garage and we'll get out, and then we'll go in through the garage. So that's something to think about there. So in any event, I'm looking for going to start transitioning everything, trying to get everything on the same system that we'll have in the house. Right now I have some Mercury Innovations lights that I got from Walmart for they're like $20 a pair, and they have colors. They work really well. I had an old system, my older system that I also have is that I brought with me to the apartment here, is a Lightify system, and unfortunately Ostrom Slovenia is exiting the market with the Lightify products, because the servers that they run on are becoming close to end of life. So in any event, that is another thing that's on my list. Another things too, like blinds and window coverings. Yeah, fortunately for me, my wife is not into the frilly stuff, so it's not too difficult to pick blinds and stuff. She'll pick colors and whatnot, you know, but she's not into like the flowery stuff, which I'm totally fine with. But I'm going to have my office space is going to be over my garage. It's in what they call a bonus room up there. The only thing that's kind of a negative with the new home is the office upstairs over the garage has no door on it. At least when we move in, it's not going to have one on it. I might talk to the wife and say, hey, why don't I get a contractor, maybe I can have them put a door in it, on it, so that I can have a door when I'm up there working. Just a thought. But and then I also had to buy, when we moved in the apartment, we had to buy a microwave, because it's our old house that we sold, we had a microwave over the stove. The new house is going to have a microwave over the stove, but the apartment had no microwave. So we bought a Gallons. And this is actually might be interesting to you, because a friend of mine who also drives trucks, he lives in Florida, but he drives trucks as well. I believe he also does reefers too. He has a microwave that he got, and I got the same one he has in his truck, a Gallons microwave from Walmart, and it actually has air frying built into it. So I actually really use that air frying quite a bit. But the nice thing, though, is when we move the house, since I'll have a microwave in the kitchen, I'm going to take this microwave upstairs, so then I'll have things like some microwave popcorn. I might have some frozen dinners to stick in. I have a little mini fridge that's actually with me here. It has a small freezer section, so I can take like a lunch or two up there in the evening and stick it in there, so that technically I don't have to go downstairs except for to go to the bathroom, because there's no bathroom up there. It's just a set of steps up to that. But the main area of the house, though, is all completely on one level. So on the weekends, unless I go up there to use my own space, because I'm going to have my 3D printers and whatnot are going to be up there. Excuse me. So those are going to be upstairs. I'm also planning on doing things like I might get a TV up there and a small little love seat or couch that I can sit on and watch TV up there by myself, or play video games too. I'm going to put I have a Atari 800 XL, not the one that I had when I was a kid, but it was my first computer. So I have one of those. It's in storage now, so I'm going to attach it to that TV as well. So, Bart, sorry for leaving you a book, but the house is kind of an exciting thing. If you go and subscribe to my YouTube channel, the Life in Ohio YouTube channel, I have been putting videos up there, making videos as the construction progress goes. And kind of one interesting thing this time when we're building this house versus the last time when I built our first house, is I have my drone, and I take it every week. I've been taking it down and using it to take drone shots of the progress. So and I've been putting those in the video as well. So before I go, one more kind of couple more details on this was one of the reasons we decided it is neither of us are getting any younger, of course, and we wanted to make it just to have a nicer existence, not have to worry about things breaking down for the next however long we live, so we have at least a good 5-6 year break before we have to be real concerned about things breaking. So that's kind of one reason. The other is where the area we're moving, it's in kind of a semi-new style. Some people will call this more like a condominium, but it's not. It's really a house. But in the section of the subdivision we live in, we pay for a association. Actually, I think there's like two fees there. We pay the association and stuff, and then part of this second fee is for groundskeeping. So the lawn mowing is taken care of for us. We do not have to mow the lawn. Snow removal, taken care of. So the only thing we have to do is basically keep track of, take care of our own space, which is pretty nice. I don't have to do a lot of the physical work that I hated doing at my old house. I didn't, Not that I just didn't. It's not something I enjoy, you know. So the only negative is that because they do all the yard work, all the groundskeeping and stuff like that, is that I have to not basically one thing I'll have not have the ability to do is put up a fence. So I can't put up a fence around my backyard. I'm all right with that. My backyard's actually not that large, but my old house is around 1,400 feet, square feet, and the new one is a little over 2,000, so it's quite a bit of more space, too. So, all right, take care. Sorry for leaving you a book, but keep an eye on my YouTube channel, and you can see how things are going. And if you happen to be in the area, when I have it, we're going to have a housewarming probably sometime in June. I'm going to have people come over. So you can come if you happen to be in town. Talk to you later.
Okay. Well, thanks again, Joel. As far as garages go, I'm sure you remember the story that I recently told about my youngest brother's wife's Mustang getting stolen out of their garage. He had left his pickup unlocked, and there was a garage door opener, I think, in the console, and, you know, like a cup holder in the console of the pickup, a Ford pickup. And he had failed to lock the door. And so in the middle of the night at some point, somebody came and found the pickup unlocked, and they found the garage door opener, and they opened the garage door. And in the meantime, his wife had left her purse in the car, in the Mustang. It was a 2017 Ford Mustang. She had left her purse in the car, and of course it has one of the key fobs. At all, you know, as long as the key fob's in the car, then you just put your foot on the brake and press the start button and off you go. And so they closed the garage door after they left. So they woke up the next morning and no car. Look, walk out in the garage. Oops, where's the car? Did you pay the payment? So in any case, they found the car, I don't know, a couple of days later, and it was in really bad, you know, kind of bad shape. And so what ended up happening, I don't know if I ever told what happened, but and after, I don't know, it was more than a week, like a week and a half, the insurance company finally settled up with them. And then they, I think that car ended up being totaled because they found drug paraphernalia in it. And I'm heard that, at least from my youngest brother, that he was told as long as if they find drug paraphernalia in a car like that, that it can, even if you get it detailed and cleaned up, that it's not considered safe for children to be in. And so they just total it because it's, you know, just, you know. So, but apparently that's what they did. I don't know. But in any case, they settled up with the insurance company somehow, and they ended up with one of these new Ford Broncos. And seems like I saw it, when was it, day before yesterday I saw it. They were driving it when I met them. And it looks like a nice car. So, but in any case, they ended up with the new Ford Bronco. But the moral of the story is, with a garage, don't ever leave your, you know, any kind of a garage door opener in a vehicle that's not parked in the closed garage. Because even if you, let's say you leave the garage door opener in a car that won't fit in the garage, or you don't put it in there for whatever reason, usually people end up using the garage for a storage bin and their vehicle sits outside. I think that happens more often than not, seems to me. But if you, let's say you lock the car, but you've got the garage door opener in it, somebody can break the window, break into that, and then they've got a key, basically a key to your house. It just opens right up and can come right on in. So I've never had a garage, and I've never had a garage door opener, and I can see where it would be really easy to think, well, that's once that garage door's closed, the house is sort of locked up, and you can just kind of do whatever you want. You know, so that's why his wife left her purse in the car. But, you know, I don't know. One thing leads to another, and then there you go. So now what I've talked to him the other day. Now what they've still got the same garage door opener. They were able to get a new remote opener. But this time it's on the keychain. So they just take the keys, and he takes the keys, and I'm sure he's really good about locking his pickup now. She obviously keeps the you know, that new Ford Bronco in the garage. But I'm sure he's good about locking the thing now, since he's had, you know, the vehicle stolen that way. They were in the house sleeping, by the way, when in the middle of the night, and he had no clue. Of course, it was on the other end of the house. So, you know, their bedroom. So, but yeah, be careful with the garage door. You know, because I could see where it would be really easy to, you know. And then the other idea with, you know, the idea that, you know, you want the thing, you know, use geofencing to unlock the door as you're approaching, or you get so close. Yeah, that sounds like a neat idea, but do you really want that? You know, let's say you get, I don't know what the proximity would be, but let's say it's half a block away that you get, and then the door automatically unlocks, and or the garage door automatically opens. Well, what if there just happens to be a thief right there? Yeah, I think about these things. So I want to be the one that unlocks it, or let's say you pull up to a garage, maybe once visually it's in sight, then you push the button and it opens and you go in, you drive right in, then you close it. But the idea that it's just going to automatically unlock based on a geo fencing, and I could do that right now. I have this August AUGUST smart lock on one of my doors, on the French doors. And it is capable of doing the geofencing where it would just automatically unlock. I don't want that. If I want to unlock the thing with the app, then I unlock it. Or if I want to lock it, I lock it with the app. Or if I walk through the door and I come in, I turn the lock manually and it's locked. But I don't want the thing automated. And that's the other thing about home automation. I know there are a lot of different products, and the products are supposed to work with each other, you know, using these different standards such as Z-Wave or whatever. And what I have found, at least with me personally, is the most functional part of this whole so-called home automation movement revolves around either cameras or remote control thermostat. A remote control thermostat is very useful for me, because I can, you know, when I'm gone, I can, like when it was cold, I could check on the house, the temperature of the house. Pops right up into the app. Control the thermostat remotely. Usually whenever, like in the winter, the day before I come home, I go ahead and bump it up to, you know, 70, 72, whatever. And, you know, maybe about 24 hours or so before I get home, sometimes a little less. But then whenever I get home, it's perfectly comfortable. Everything's up to temperature. Same way in the summer. I leave it on... I think the highest it goes is like 90 degrees. About 24 hours before I know I'm going to be home, I knock it down to about 72 or whatever. So the remote control is really useful. And then, of course, I've got several different cameras. I've got some that you just, you know, there's, basically it gives you a live view. I've got them programmed into app on my phone, and at one time I had five of them. Two of them now are dead, and I've still got three of those that are functioning. And so I can look at those and, you know, see various, like one view is inside the house. Well, I've got, actually got two of those, so I've got a couple of different views inside the house and then a couple out, you know, out of a couple of different windows, sort of look at the neighbors, but basically look at the yard and see, you know, did it snow, did it not snow, is the snow melting, etc. And then most recently I added Blink cameras, which actually are owned by Amazon, and the Blink cameras are a little bit different. These other, the first cameras that I have, actually have to be plugged in all the time. The Blink cameras run on lithium AA batteries, and so with those, they're not giving a live view all the time, although I can look, I can do a live view, and they've actually got a little speaker built in so that you could actually talk to somebody. So you could use those, you know, one of those, any of the Blink cameras that come in the kit, you could use them as a sort of like a Ring doorbell type thing scenario. But so I bought the kit that had five of those cameras. So I got one set up in my bedroom, one set up in my dining room. Let's see, where are the others? I got one at the front door, one at the back door, and then one kind of in the, you know, living area or part of the living area. So it's nice to, and then two of them, because they've got them fairly well. They've got them so that you can go into the settings on each individual camera. They operate, you know, there's a base unit. There's a small base unit that I plugged a USB key into where it sort of, you know, it's saving the videos. And so I have two of them, one that's aimed at the front door. So it, you know, I got it, you know, kind of attached to the rail on the deck on the front. And so if someone walks up there, it records about 5 seconds worth of video, and then it sends a notification to the phone along with the video. Same way with the back door. I've got, you know, with these French doors in the back, on the back deck, I've got one of them kind of, I attached it to a tree. It's, oh, it's probably, how far is that tree away? Maybe 25 feet, 30 feet. So it's got a nice view, actually, of the whole house, but especially, you know, with those French doors. So if someone walks up, or if an animal goes by, it'll trigger it, and they're set to record about 5 seconds. And I can customize the length of time, but of course, the more, the greater the length of time, the more it's going to eat into those batteries. They claim that with the Blink cameras that the batteries will last about approximately 2 years. But that depends heavily, obviously, on how often they're triggered and how you use them. Now, the ones that I have just internally in the house, even though they're weatherproof, they're just here in the house, and then I'm able to just view them if I want to. But they also, the other thing with the Blink cameras, you set them up and then they'll take a picture like every hour, roughly every hour. And then it every day, each one of them sends a video that, starts out, you know, it's like every hour and it just kind of plays through and there's no sound with those. So it's a little bit different kind of a system, but it actually works pretty well. And I still don't have the fiber internet. I've still got the DSL. I called up the company that's doing the fiber internet, and they're saying, well, it was delayed by the The contractors were delayed by the severe cold, snow, and weather, and which I understand that. So I'm now kind of expecting maybe I'll be getting fiber maybe in March, but probably more likely in April. So I'm really expecting I'm just assuming that it's going to be in April that I'll be getting that. I'll get it at some point, you know, so. But in any case, Joel, I found you have a channel on YouTube, but you must have more than one. Because I found this channel, and the last, it's in, under your name. And the last time it was updated was in 2018, and you got like 15 subscribers and a few videos. So you must have some other channel. Now on Facebook, of course, I'm friends with you on Facebook, and I did, you know, kind of scroll through, and I saw, you know, where you had different pictures of the progress of the construction of your house. And of course, that's always exciting to kind of, you know, I watch a lot of videos of houses, not necessarily houses under construction, but sometimes remodeling videos can be interesting, or just different new houses that are for sale. You know, or model houses. Sometimes those can be very interesting, especially the staging, how they stage the houses with furniture to kind of, you know, make them feel more homey. And sometimes they have some really interesting, I just enjoy that kind of thing. You know, seeing how they stage them and what have you. And it's also interesting, too. I also find it interesting, you know, how they come up with these different floor plans. Because, you know, it's really interesting. You can have a smaller house, and if it's got the right floor plan, it's actually, you're probably more likely to use that space, as opposed to you can have a great big house with a floor plan that where you end up kind of not using part of the house, you know. So the floor plan can make a difference, probably a bigger difference with the floor plan than it is with the actual square footage. So anyway, probably better be cutting this off. Hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.